Well, I wanted to welcome everybody to the Horsemanship Remark Show Sunday special with my very, very special guest, the Dr. Temple Grandin. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, it's really good to be here. Now, should we start right at the top of the hour?
Well, I think let's go for it because, well, you can tell me a little bit about your travel. Let's maybe
All
wait.
Right. Well, the plane was late, but they managed to make up some time. So it was only about half an hour late. Then I got out to my car and it had like 6 inches of snow all over it.
And no gloves, you were telling me.
I had one glove I found in the car, and that made it somewhat better getting it off.
Yeah. One time I showed up at the Portland airport last year and we had 2 inches of ice. And
it wasn't ice. I didn't have to do that horrible scraping to get it off.
I had no ice scraper. I had to use a credit card.
I did have an ice scraper.
You did, but you didn't need it. Good, good. All right. Well, I think we should get started because I'll bet you that folks are excited to tune in here.
Okay.
And, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about since we chatted was how much horsemanship really has been shaped. This is interesting to me. The whole landscape of horsemanship has been shaped by you.
Well, I've always been advocated, you know, understanding the animal and looking at things from the animal's point of view.
Mm-hmm. While being right away to start, I want you to talk about all the things that you want to talk about. But what really struck me, did you know who Tom Dorrance was?
Oh, yes, I know who Tom Dorrance is. Absolutely, I do.
So remember how in his book, he talked about how horses want a closeness.
Well, that's right. And you treat horses right, it totally changes their whole demeanor. And this is something that's really important. You know, a lot of animals are food motivated, but some horses are, you know, like a relationship motivated. And I think it's really good that people are getting away from, you know, harsh, rough methods of training, because what I've observed is that changes the whole demeanor of the animal.
And
the other thing I want to talk about is that horses and all other animals are sensory based, not word based. This is really important. They live in a sensory world. Now, a lot of things that horses get afraid of are vision related because they're a flight animal. They have eyes designed to scan the horizon as they're grazing, and they see something that might be danger, they tend to flee. So what is it seeing? What is it smelling? What is it hearing? And a lot of the things that will make a horse spook are visually based. Vision is sort of the dominant sense when it comes to things they're afraid of. But if you want to understand an animal, you have to get away from words, completely get away from words. And when I first started my initial work with cattle back when I was in my 20s, I got in the chute to see what they were seeing. And people thought that was kind of crazy. But since I'm a visual thinker, I think totally visually. I don't think in words. It was obvious to me to look at what cattle were seeing. And they would balk at shadows, reflections, coats on fences, a little pieces of string hanging down, little things we would tend to not notice. Now, my student, Megan Corgan, and her advisor, Sarah Matlock, did a really interesting experiment to show why sometimes horses might spook for no reason. And she had a little 4 foot by 4 foot by 4 foot children's colorful plastic playset that has a slide on it and a swing for a toddler. And this thing looks very different when you rotate it. Like, for example, pretend this book is the slide. It looks completely different when rotated. So they walked fillies and colts by this. These were weren't broke to ride yet, just trained to the halter, 15, 16 times until they no longer stopped. They no longer put the head up and no longer flared the nostrils. And when that playset was rotated, it became a new thing. In fact, we have an open access paper on one of the authors on it. It's a reaction to a complex rotated object in the American Quarter Horse. I don't know why the reviewers wanted American Quarter Horse in the title, but they did. And then I kind of repeated the experiment informally with some Western riders with a great big green plastic chair. And we walked them by it, walked them right by it, till they no longer stopped. And when it was rotated, half the horses did a hard stop. Now, this was all done at a walk, because it would have been super dangerous if at anything faster than a walk. And all of these experiments was done at a walk. But the thing I wanted to show is that that chair or that playset, when rotated, became a new thing. A verbal thinker like us is going to look at that and go, yeah, it's a kid's toy. Yeah, it's a chair. You would recognize sort of what it is on a higher level. And then one of my students told me one time that she put her horse's feed trough up on end and it became a new object and her horse was afraid of it. You know, where we'd go, yeah, that's a feed trough up on end. But
it's really
totally different when rotated.
So do you think that horses or animals in general, do they create categories of things at all?
Yes,
or...
they can. They can.
Okay.
For example, let's say we're training the horse to tolerate flags. I don't think we have to do the flags for all 50 states. They're not quite that specific. But what flags are a common thing that horses are afraid of when they go to shows because they haven't experienced flags at home. So what I would probably do on training for flags, first of all, I'm going to decorate the pasture fence with flags and let them walk up to them. New things are attractive when the animal voluntarily approaches, and they're scary if you shove it in their face. And the more high-strung or nervous flighty horse, like maybe an Arabian, for example, have a bigger reaction than a quarter horse. But we need to be getting them used to different vehicles, little kids, just all the different things they could see. So probably what I would do with flags, okay, like in the parades, they'll use a flag that's like 5 feet long and, you know, a kind of standard American flag they'd use in the parade, and maybe use a couple of state flags or some other flags. And then you get those pennants, they put it used car lots, those little pennants on a string. That's kind of different. Get some of those. And then there are those flags that stand up on a pole and they're kind of curvy on the top. And they're not really a flag or a banner thing, or the sign. And train them to some of those. But let's say the kind of flag that somebody would ride with in a parade looks very different than little plastic pennants on a string. So I'd probably want to train them to those three types and have, you know, several different types of them. But again, I don't think we have to do all 50 states. They're not that specific. It's sort of more the size, it's colorful, and there is some ability to generalize. You see, the other thing we can get with horses is sensory-based fear memories. Like in my book, Animals in Translation, right here, my book, Animals in Translation, there was the black hat horse that was afraid of black cowboy hats because he got abused by somebody wearing a black cowboy hat. In fact, during a veterinary procedure, he chucked alcohol in the horse's face. Really, really bad. And white cowboy hats were fine. Now, when I put the cowboy hat on the ground, it was less scary. I got him to touch it on the ground. But as I moved the cowboy hat closer to my head, it got increasingly more and more scary.
Really?
Yeah, really. In fact, if I put it on the ground, then as I moved the cowboy hat towards the black hat towards my head, the horse got more and more upset and was getting ready to rear. So got the hat out away from it. Now, one of the problems I got black cowboy hats, I can't get rid of black cowboy hats. You know, there's other things I might be able to eliminate from the horse's life, but if it's a Western horse, I can't eliminate black cowboy hats. So you would have to work on trying to desensitize that gradually. But the problem with a fear memory, it's like a PTSD. It can still flash back. That's the problem. Now, there's some other fear memory things that I can fix. We have a program at Colorado State University called the Right Horse Program, where they take rescue horses and they rehab them and then find good homes for them. And there was one horse in the Right Horse Program that I think had been abused with a snaffle bit, frothing at the mouth, chopping at the mouth, all hot and bothered. And we went in the tack room and we got a bit with just a straight bar mouthpiece. And the horse calmed right down, stopped frothing at the mouth. It was like we opened a new sensory file. You see, a jointed bit feels very different than a straight one. Then I've had the students hold the jointed bit and also hold the straight one and look at them as feeling pictures. Now I can control what bits go in a horse's mouth. Also, anecdotally, I've had four or five cases where usually a snaffle, I don't know why the snaffle is getting so associated with bad things, but when the bit was changed to something that felt totally different, it was sort of like it fixed the horse, like opened a new sensory file folder. And when I did that in the ride horse class, I was so happy having the students see that. Now, another common thing that can happen is bucking when you change gaits. Now, think about it. Saddles feel different at a walk, trot, and a canter. So maybe you might want to put a backpack on and walk, trot, and canter and think about how it feels differently. Well, I had a horse when I was young, when I was in my 20s, and he bucked when you went from a trot to a canter. And he was a Western horse. I had a complete set of English tack, really nice English tack. And I could have fixed him with that. And I would have gotten a weird saddle pad that would have felt completely different. And then started him really carefully with the English saddle, which would start a new file folder. And I'm going to make sure I train him slowly enough and carefully enough so he doesn't buck. And I could have fixed him riding with English tack. I had the saddle. I just didn't know the things that I know now. You see, those are things I can fix. I can control what saddle goes on a horse. I control what bit. I can't get rid of all the black hats in the world. That's just impossible. And when the owner walked up to him wearing a black cowboy hat, I was holding this horse and it started to rear. And I said, "Get away before he rears."
I have noticed that sometimes in horses when the work gets harder, like the training gets harder, but they have no association with those particular items that I'm trying to teach. I call it open water. And I learned that from you
Well, you
because
see, then you see nothing's bad happened, but
that's right.
I was just amazed. The students almost couldn't believe it when we picked out a nice bridle, a nice straight mouthpiece. We had to find one that would fit him, and we put that on him, and all the chomping and thruffing stopped. It was like magic. It was literally like opening a sensory file folder. And then I had the students hold the snaffle bit and close their eyes, and hold the straight bit and close our eyes. I said, think of them as feeling pictures. So the category is jointed bits were bad. You see, they would make that anything that was a snaffle type bit was bad. They'll make
This is
some limited
interesting.
generalization.
Yeah, well, so it's interesting that the whole category of the feeling of a bit on the tongue
No,
was.
that wasn't it. It was the snaffle. And then I had them close their eyes. We hung a bridle on those two sides of a small gate, so they could put their hands like this on, hold, let's pretend this pen's a bit. So they would hold it like this, and then the other bit like this, and shut their eyes and think of them as feeling pictures. And I saw some lights going on in their heads when we had them do that.
So what's the difference between a visual picture and a feeling picture?
It's
And the
a
reason I'm
different
asking.
sensory modality. It's a different sensory modality. You have vision and then you have touch. Well, a horse's interaction with a bit is touch. But then when they held those bits in their hands, and I had them put their hands on them, like this pen was a bit, again, like this, make it like in the horse's mouth in your hand, it's a very different feeling. So it was a, well, I like to call it a feeling picture.
Picture, yeah.
Yeah,
I
it was
guess I always
a feeling picture, and have them hold them, and then the backpack thing. I just asked them to do that on their own time because we didn't want to waste too much time in the class messing around with backpacks when they wanted to ride their horses. But I so when you go home, try that with your backpack, and then think about how it feels, because bucking when you change gaits is a common problem. It's a common problem. When I go to horse events. And I think the easiest way to fix it would be to ch change the tack and change the pad too. So the whole saddle is a different feeling picture.
And then you can recategorize
Well, it
that.
just becomes you're just starting from scratch then. You're
Sure,
starting from
sure.
scratch with that saddle, and you make sure that you don't do it too fast and have them buckling to change gates.
All right. That's very interesting. So did you fix a lot of horses when you were younger and
Well, I
spending?
didn't. The thing about the saddle thing, I didn't know how to fix Sizzler. I was in my 20s then. I didn't know. You see, now, let's say we have a horse that bucks when you change gates. Yes, we can desensitize it, but it's just so much easier to just open up a new file folder. And so I'd get a totally different pad, a totally different saddle, and let's just start over again.
That's a very, very interesting way to say it, is just open a new file
It
folder.
opens a new file. That's the best way to put it. And when we did this at the Ride Horse class, it worked so well. Man, it made my day for a week because it worked so well. It was almost like magic.
And so, do you think that's why sometimes when a horse, when you ch like
Don't
sometimes
go
when a
too
person.
under or do you? You're buffering, so don't wave your arms around. You're overloading the connection. Okay. All right. All right. Now you can talk to me. Okay.
Sometimes when an upset horse gets handed to me, let's say, and I make a few changes in the way that I am acting, they will recat like it's almost as if they open a new file folder and have a completely bare slate or an empty file, I
Well, and
suppose,
then
just.
the other things, horses often pick out a when something bad's happened, like with that one man with a black cowboy hat. You know, for somebody else, I went to prison where they were doing a BLM Mustangs, training them at a prison, and the horses were afraid of the guards because the guards were dressed Western, which would have been similar to the how people would have dressed at the roundup. And the prisons had sweatpants and sweatshirts on. That was totally different. So the prisoners were the good guys. They made a generalization, and Western clothes in general were associated with bad, where the prisoners wearing a sweatshirt and sweatpants, that looked very, very different than what the guards looked like or other people involved with roundups and things.
So I suppose part of your advice would be to notice what your horse notices
Well,
because
but
as
what I want to try to do is let's not form fear memories. Let's try to avoid forming fear memories. But if you have one, then if you can do something to open a new file folder, I can control saddles, I can control bits. I can't control clothing that everybody wears.
right.
You know, then you can do, counter conditioning and stuff, to try to desensitize it. But then the problem is, he's going to buck less when you change gates or when he sees the thing that triggers the fear, but you're still going to end up getting bucked off.
It's still there.
And we've
Yeah.
got to work on not messing horses up. Another thing in specificity that we've had a big problem with the cattle industry is that you can have people that do a very beautiful job handling their cattle on horseback, and the flight zone will be small, like maybe 15 feet. But then when a person on foot walks up, the flight zone's 100 feet. Just think about it. Person on a horse and a person walking looks very different. So it's important to get cattle accustomed to both. Because if
Interesting.
let's say you have cattle out on a ranch and they've only been handled on a horse, and then they're taken to an auction or they're taken to a feed yard or a meat plant, and they're now being handled in small pens, that can get very dangerous for the handlers. And there was an older lady run over at their plant. It was about 20 years ago, run over and she died. They stepped on her head because no matter where the cattle went in the pen, the lady was in their flight zone. They couldn't get away. So they went into the pen, rebounded back out, knocked over the 50-some-year-old lady, and stepped on her head. Yeah, it was horrible. And I've seen other very dangerous situations where horses, cattle that have only been handled on foot, on by horse, are dangerous to handle in small pens by people on foot. So what you need to do is train cattle to go in and out of pens with people on foot, so they
And I
learn that that's
suppose
okay too.
that's really interesting.
Oh
And
no,
I
and
suppose
this I've seen over and over again.
so that comes down to thinking from their perspective and thinking in a different way.
But thinking about it is a picture, a person riding a horse is a very different picture than a person walking around.
So you have to treat it like it's a completely different thing.
That's right.
Interesting. You want to talk about when you were referring to being younger and in specific, I was talking about my nephew getting upset about things, autistic stressors, anxiety,
Well,
being
people with
relieved.
autism have a really high fear response. And sudden surprises can be stressful. Now, this is similar to horses. People say, my horse was fine at home. He went berserk at the show. Well, let's look at the things you have at a show you don't have at home. All kinds of flags. We already discussed that. Other things I want to train them to are balloons and bicycles. And then a fourth thing is drones. Now, if a drone just hovers in the air, that's fine. But at our equine center, we had a news photographer take a drone and come at the horses like a plane coming in from a landing. And after that happened, these horses were unrideable for 20 minutes. I timed it. It took 20 minutes to calm down. So if you have a situation where a horse gets really upset and really scared, it will take 20 minutes to half an hour for them to fully calm down.
So is that a that's how long it takes the cortisol to leave
And
or
the
the
heart rate to go down, and for the heart rate to go down. If you've ever been in a near car accident, and I had a one time had a trailer pass me and a 2x6, a part of half a 2x6 board came off, and I managed to avoid hitting it, but my heart was pounding. I was swearing too. I will not say what I said, and it took about 20 minutes for me to calm down. And when I
Sure.
bring this up at horse meetings, have you ever been in a near car accident that you managed to avoid? And think about the time it took for you to calm down. That's the same thing with a horse. He gets really, really scared of something, like a drone coming at him, and that takes 20 minutes to calm down. And drones are another thing we probably need to train them to. If you hover a drone up in the air high and you slowly bring it down straight, they'll look up at it. But you come in fast across their visual field. That's going to cause a big scare unless they're specifically trained to that. The other thing, we
So
need to get them used to different kinds of vehicles and all sorts of other things.
the trajectory at which the drone is coming at the horse, does that do you think that categorizes it as a completely different picture?
Well,
That's what you're saying.
if the drone hovers, and I've seen this with cattle too, same thing, hovers and comes down like this, cattle will look up at it. One time I went to Ireland and we landed in a baseball field in a helicopter and just came straight down. The cattle just stared at it. But then when we left, okay, when the helicopter landed, it went straight down like this. That'd be like a drone hovering. When the helicopter took off, it went this way like that. And the cattle freaked out and ran off.
Interesting. So the trajectory is very important
Said,
too.
yeah, hovering drones. If a photographer just hovers a drone up there, usually that's not a problem. But imagine, like if you were standing on the runway and a plane was coming in for a landing, that's basically what this news photographer did with the drone. It was incredibly stupid. And we're very lucky we didn't get hurt.
Yeah. Horses and cattle, so dangerous, right? So understanding them is
Well, one
so
of the things
crucial.
is get your animals used to novelty. You see, now the thing about novelty, if you put a flag out in the middle of the pasture, horses will come up to it. You see, novelty is attractive when you can voluntarily approach it. When they can voluntarily approach, novelty is attractive. When you shove it in their face suddenly, and this is what you don't do with the flags, then it's scary. Novelty is scary when it suddenly appears and attractive when animals can voluntarily approach it. The other thing, I also have a chapter in my visual thinking book right here on animal consciousness. And I find it hard to believe that you still have people today that would question whether or not dogs, cattle, or horses are conscious. And I think this gets down to verbal thinking. You see, you have some people that are very, very verbal in their thinking. And if they totally think in words, they might have a hard time imagining that animals could think without words. And that's discussed in the chapter in my book, Visual Thinking, on consciousness. Another thing is, it's very clear in the neuroscience literature that horses have emotions. Animals have emotions. And this was discussed in one of my earlier books, Animals Make Us Human. And the Jack Panksepp emotional systems were discussed. And all mammals have this, and birds probably do too. You have fear that motivates an animal to avoid danger. And you might take the Arabian horse, for example, can get more scared than maybe a draft horse would. You have fear. And then you have anger. Most problems during training, I don't think, are anger. It's mostly fear-based. Then you have separation distress. Okay, you separate a horse from the other horses and he's whinnying his head off. That's separation stress. That's a different emotion than fear in a different part of
It
the brain. Yeah, fear and separation distress are different emotions. They are not the same emotion. And
Okay.
in my visual thinking book, I discuss the Panksepp emotional systems. They're also discussed in Animals Make Us Human, along with clicker training methods for training horses. But fear and separation distress are not the same thing. Okay, you take a colt away from the mare and they're running back and forth along the fence and whinnying. That is separation distress. Or you take one horse away from another horse and they're whinnying. That's separation stress. Then you have seek, or the exploration. And some animals are high explorers. They'll graze more grass, approach a novel object more quickly. Exploration or seek, it's the same thing. And then you have the sex drive, of course. And then you have mother young nurturing. That's the oxytocin system. Maybe you have a mare that really will defend her baby, but she doesn't lick it or groom it. You see, those are separate emotional systems. And then you have play. You know, when you see animals sort of just frolicking around, that's play. And this has been in the neuroscience literature for years and years. But back in the early 90s, when I first started out as a professor, I wasn't allowed to put the word fear in my papers. That
Were
word,
you, did that
no,
make you crazy?
that word was not allowed. So I have a paper and I had to call it agitated behavior because reviewers made me take the fear word out. But now fear is an acceptable word to use and it's no longer considered anthropomorphic.
So, what do you think about the word anthropomorphic? Because people, so the way that I've heard it said is that anthropomorphizing is putting human thoughts and values onto the animal, which, of course,
Well, they have emotions, but you see, it's simpler. I mean, there's a lot of, higher concepts that, horses wouldn't understand. Because they, but they have emotions. They can learn. They know the
do you
good
think they
people. They know the
remember
bad
things?
people.
Do you think they plan? That is a
Yes, I
question
think
that.
animals can plan. There's been a very interesting research done by Nicola Clayton with what's called the corvid birds, like crows. And they did an experiment that I like to call it the cheap hotel room and the expensive hotel room. And the expensive hotel room has a mini bar. And then so it's basically three cages, a cheap hotel, a lobby cage, and an expensive room with a mini bar. Now, during the day, the crow has free range to go through both hotel rooms and the lobby. Then at night, he's going to be locked into one of the rooms. And the crow very quickly learns that if he gets that when he got locked in the cheap room, there was no food. So then the crow learned they should take food from the expensive hotel and stash it in the cheap room so that if he got locked in the cheap room, he'd have food. Crows learn that.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's some planning for the future.
And without a doubt, I've observed horses saving water in water buckets. Like my horses have 2 5-gallon buckets. And I have noticed repeatedly that if they drink almost all the second bucket, they will routinely leave just a little bit, especially on hot days. So that's
Well,
when I
then
started.
so they can get a drink later.
That's right. That's right.
Because
Fascinating.
they're not sure it's going to get refilled. So they want to save a little bit for a drink later. I mean, I do the same thing with a water bottle on a plane.
Me
I do
too.
exactly the same thing.
Yeah. So do you think that, so they remember and they plan?
You know, they can plan and now it's more limited. And then I know people whose dogs know which way the roads go to the dog park and which way the roads go to the veterinarian. And when one guy told me, he says, well, when I make this one turn on this road, the dog knows it's the veterinarian. Now, one thing the veterinary profession's been doing is what they call fear-free. You make sure that the puppy's first experience, the vet clinic's positive, lots of treats. This is really important. It's really important that an animal's first experience with something new, like a veterinarian or a trailer, be a good first experience. The first experience with a new piece of equipment, a new person, or a new place is totally terrible. You're going to have a hard time getting them to get in that particular type of trailer. Let's make sure we don't have them banging on their head or any other bad thing happen when we introduce a trailer.
For sure, or change
But
environments,
first
right?
experiences that are bad make a lasting impression that are hard, that's hard to undo.
How interesting. So put your book up one more time.
Yeah, this
The
is my new book, Visual Thinking.
visual
And
thinking. So
visual thinking, and it talks about different kinds of ways that people think. I'm autistic and I'm an extreme visual thinker. That's called an object visualizer. You know, some of your very, very, very best horse trainers are not going to be very good at higher math. And people like object visualizers like me, we're good at four things: art, animals, photography, and fixing mechanical things. Then you have other people that are pattern thinkers, pattern mathematics thinkers. You know, think chemistry, physics, music, and math go together. Then you have verbal thinkers. And a lot of people are mixtures of the different kinds of thinkers. But I'm an extreme object visualizer. Everything I think about is a picture.
And so, will you want to explain to people top-down thinking versus bottom-up thinking? Because I feel like that really relates to horse training and
Well, it
putting,
does.
especially.
It does because animals can make categories. Okay, let's say we're going to be taking them around all these different arenas for shows. So you have an arena at home, and then you're going to go to some other new arena. Let's make sure that's a good first experience in the new arena. And then you take them to maybe three or four or five arenas. There's going to be a category then. Arenas are okay because they have a certain sameness. You have indoor ones, you have outdoor ones. They can make those kind of categories because back going back to the bits, well, Snaffle bits were bad. And there's a whole
Right.
bunch of them that vary slightly. I'm not saying people shouldn't use Snaffle bits, but the
Sure.
horses that got abused, that was the bit that was used. There's a dreadful wire thing that I found online that would cut a horse's mouth. Horrible. That is a Snaffle. So if the horse was subjected to that, then all the bits jointed to the middle go in the bad category.
I tell you, one of the interesting things that I feel like your work it has been so influential in moving forward with horses in particular. And when you said that a severe bit made me think of it, because the idea to me, training horses, there is a certain threshold to which you cannot scare them more and get a result. You cannot hurt them more and get a result. Of course, we don't want to train that way
Well, you
at
don't want to train
all.
that way anyway. And the other thing is just training a horse to lead. If he steps forward, let up on the lead rope. I mean, just that's very, 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 a very basic thing. Now, one of the things we're doing in the training, there's two programs they have. They have Right Horse, and then they have the training program where they get really high top quality young quarter horses, and they train them. And one thing they've started doing, I really like this. They train it to ride with the halter first. Then they put the saddle on, full tack, saddle, Western saddle, ride it around in the arena just with the halter. Training it, you know, that to respond to, you know, you can't stop a horse with a halter by force, and using a halter. And then when they first put the bit in the mouth, the horse was like trying to spit it out. And then when the horse was just still for a second, they took the bit out. When it didn't chomp for just a second, they took the bit out. In other words, when you get one little tiny bit of cooperative behavior, you reward it. And people make the mistake lots of times, the horse is kicking the bucket. Well, then you feed it. Well, now you just rewarded kicking the bucket. People accidentally reward animals all the time, or pushy behavior. You can't have horses and cattle pushing on people. Well, if you feed them right when they're pushing on you, just rewarded pushy behavior. Oh, they got to stand there politely, then you put the feed down.
And so, can you will you just explain to people what top down and bottom up
Well, top
thinking?
down thinking is you have a big broad concept. Let's just say natural horsemanship or low stress horsemanship. That's a big broad concept. So I'm going to think about things that specific things you could do that'd be part of that. Like making sure first experience is good. That's something with a new thing is good. Just doing the most simple pressure and release. Those are specific. I talk about the same way with in autism. I'll talk about an inclusive classroom. That's a big top-down concept, but how do you do it? Well, some people with autism and migraines or dyslexia can see flicker on certain types of LED lights. So let's not have those in the classroom. That's something you can do for an inclusive classroom. Let's work on getting bullying stopped. And then another thing is, a lot of people like me do not remember long strings of verbal instruction. So let's do pilot's checklists for tasks that involve a sequence. Make pilot's checklists. But pilots are
Oh,
mandatory. And
yeah.
those are three things that you can do to help make a classroom more inclusive. But those are things that are specific
So you have
things
to
that you
start.
can do.
So
Right,
you
because
recommend.
you get these big broad concepts, but not enough explanation of how would you actually do it. And that's usually more than one thing that you do.
Can we jump to the big top-down thing that I want you to talk about, that about changing? Oh, I want at some point I want you to talk about people, this idea that we need to have kids have a job, and that for in particular an
Well, I
auto.
think in autism, one of the big problems I'm seeing right now is fully verbal kids like 14, 16 years old doing well in school, and they've never done life skills, bank account, shopping, just basic things not being taught. The parents doing too much for them. And then I have grandparents that come up to me, and they find out they're autistic later on in life, and it's a relief for them. Because it helps understand problems with relationships. But that grandparent had a job because when he was 11, he had a paper route. Well, we need to be doing things to replace the paper route because they know do not exist anymore. Well, let's look at things to replace the paper route. Walking the next door neighbor's dog. It's very important for these kids to do something on a schedule outside the home. Maybe a church volunteer job or a farmer's market volunteer job or mowing the neighbor's lawn. These can start around 11 or 12. One girl I just talked to very recently, a couple of months ago, she's the coffee lady at their church. And she's very, very proud that she's the coffee lady. And when I was a teenager, I was cleaning horse stalls and basically running a horse barn. I was proud of the fact that I ran a horse barn. My job was to clean the stalls, bed them, feed the horses, and put them in and out. That was my job. And I'm seeing too many kids on the spectrum, they may do well in school, but they haven't learned any work skills. They haven't learned life skills.
And sadly, that applies to lots of kids that are not autistic as well. So you want to talk about the importance of a schedule and working outside the home too?
Well, I
It's
think the
not just.
working outside the home is important. And something that's on a job, okay, let's say it's walking Mr. Jones's dog. Well, then every day at 6:30 before you go to school, you got to go to the Jones's house and take the dog out for a quality 15-minute walk. It is a job. You see,
You
and
know
that's
what's
a very
interesting?
important skill to learn.
And there's so much satisfaction in contributing something. It's interesting in horsemanship. Have you heard it talked about that people often say that horses like having a job, and right? They like
Dogs
even going to
are
get.
true. That's true for like certain dogs too.
Is it?
Yeah, like the shepherding dogs. They
Oh,
need a
yeah.
job.
So, do you notice that with horses in general, that
Well,
or is it?
a lot of horses are cooped up in stalls way too much. And if you're in a situation where, let's say, you just have an arena to put the turn them out, well, then turn them out in the arena for 3 or 4 hours and let them run around. That's not ideal, but that's better than just living in stalls. And the other problem we got stallions, horrible social problems with stallions. And a lot of people don't realize how abnormal that behavior is. And I discussed that in Animals in Translation. Animals reared alone will often fight other animals in a really nasty way because they haven't learned the give and take of social relationships. They haven't learned that once they're dominant, they don't have to keep fighting. They don't have to do that.
You talk a lot about in autism too, the importance of a child learning to share.
Yes,
And
yes.
I think about that correlation in terms of animals that have horses in particular that have no social skills. We see this at like a colt start, you know, if Buck was doing a colt start or you were seeing a bunch of horses get saddled for the first time and turned out for the first time, some that didn't know each other, they don't know how to operate in a herd.
Well,
They're
you see,
just
they need to be growing up in groups, and a lot of these stallions have really abnormal behavior. A Mustang out in the wild asks the mare politely. That's how it works out in the wild. And you can go into BLM pens, and there's 50 stallions in there lining up like cattle to eat, and they're not fighting because they have achieved a stable dominance order. Now, what might help out some of those young stallions, young horses, is put them in with some other horses. But I want it when you first mix them, please do not do it in a small pen. Please do not do that. I saw a horse that got its back very badly bitten because it couldn't get away. So when you do it in a big pen, like at least something the size of an arena, so that they can get away.
ideally without corners to get
Well,
stuck
yeah, he
in.
got cornered and they bit his back really bad. And it was a small pen. And that was a
Sure.
big mistake.
So do you think that learning to share the give and take of that for I that really stuck in my head when I heard you
Oh, and
talking about.
autistic kids, one of the problems they have is they can't inhibit a response. So when I was a little kid, my teacher put a lot of emphasis on learning how to wait and take turns at games. And you see, when you think about it, okay, we're waiting to get on the plane. Well, everybody walks on the plane really calmly. They're not rushing at the door. You see, learning how to wait and take turns. You wait and take turns at the cash register at the grocery store.
Sometimes I don't
You see
like
how
it,
those
but
things are related.
so you so the is there anxiety then? For instance, my horses seem to get if I really think feeding horses on a regular schedule is very bad. Meaning that if you feed your horses at 6 o'clock on the dot every evening, then somewhere around the 5:30 mark,
They're
even the
throwing
five.
a fit. Well, you know, it's probably not good for the digestion. You same thing with cattle. You change it too much, but vary it some, six, within a 2 hour period, maybe,
2 hours.
so that you don't mess up their digestion. But, some you can train animals to tolerate some variation. You
That's a
can
great.
do that. And, this whole problem of going berserk at a show, think about all the things you have at a show, that, like the flags, for example. Balloons that you don't have at home. And we need to carefully get the horse used to these things before they go to a show. I went to the great big Keeneland sale just before COVID. This is relatively recent. And when you go and look at the horses down in the stable, they're all nice and chill. Their groom brings them out. Everybody's petting them, looking at them. And then when you take them up where the sale is, they have some ri a ring, kind of a practice ring right behind where the sale is, but the loudspeaker from the auctioneer is going, and the horses were pooping diarrhea. They were pooping cow pies. They had diarrhea. because nobody had trained them to tolerate the auctioneer sound. And that tends to be more scary than just the announcer. Well, that'd be easy to train them. You could just get a recording of auctioneer sounds. They were pooping diarrhea. And then another thing, they had a separation distress issue that I don't think they recognized. You've got a $500,000 horse whinnying its head off because a strange groom was holding it. See, then when they get into the ring, they just have this little rope. There's no fence. So you wouldn't want a horse jumping into the audience. That would be very bad. So what they do is the regular groom brings it into the ring, and he has to hand the lead rope to Keeneland's groom to hold it. Want to make sure it doesn't get loose. And then the regular groom, when he stepped to the side, the horse just put their head up like that and did these giant shriekers. As soon as that lead chain was switched to the strange groom. Well, once you just train them to have strange people hold you, that's okay. Just train them to that and train them to
Sure.
the sound of the auctioneer. Just do that at home. Just gradually habituate them to it. And then they'd be chill for the whole thing.
Sounds so logical.
I was really surprised when I saw that. See a $500,000 horse, lean the head back, do giant shrieker just as the lead chain was switched and the regular groom stepped to the side and the horse couldn't see it, see his regular groom, and do a
That's
great big
interesting.
shrieker.
That's really
I
interesting.
was,
So,
and then I went to this World Cup just recently this year, and the dressage horses all sweating, their tails are flipping. When horses switch their tails and they're sweating all over, if it's not hot, they're stressed. And it made me very happy that the one that was not stressed won it. Won it. I think he enjoyed doing the pee off, so it wasn't the you know what off. The other mistake
yeah.
people make is they pat like this. This is hitting. Don't hit your horse. Stroke it. Stroke it. No, that's hitting it. Or scratch it on the withers. There's actually a journal article where they would scratch on the withers just in front of the saddle. Stroke it when it does a good job. Don't, because when that padding, that hard padding, the horse interprets that as hitting.
Is it interesting that people don't receive that message back
They don't
sometimes?
seem to get it. And I don't think the people at Keeneland realized what was happening. I'd never even been to that sale before. I walked in there and horses are supposed to have road apples, not cow pies. And here you've got $500,000 horses, $1 million horses, pooping cow pies. And the only reason for it was they'd never been accustomed to the auctioneer chant.
And
It'd be
you
an easy
are,
thing to do.
and you're the expert on, for instance, when you pointed out that the cows were stressed, it was like it wasn't just because you were a bleeding heart. It's be and then look, it turned into money to
Sure,
adjust that,
you
right?
get that
Like,
last few minutes before slaughter, you get tough meat. Cows get stressed, and pigs get pale, soft, watery meat. And there's really good reasons not to do that. And the thing is, I don't think they realized the horses were stressed. Signs of stress, tail switching. And then I found out that somebody was cutting the nerves in the tail to stop the horse from switching its tail. I'm going, that's just disgusting.
oh, that's
No, my.
terrible.
Terrible. I couldn't believe it. One of our horse people was telling me about that. And I'm going, oh, awful thing are they going to think of next? No, let's work on training the horse in such a way that we're not scaring the you know what out of it.
So I have a question for you that I hadn't thought about before. So one of the things that I have experienced, and I know many of, well, several of my close friends have experienced this as well, when we spend, let's say, 5 to 10 years with a horse and really spend a lot of time with them, develop them to a very detailed level. And what I mean by that is not just the things that they can do, but the communication between an individual, let's say me, and an individual horse, we end up with our own language because we know each other so well. And then what happens when you decide, okay, well, that horse is now 15 or 16 or whatever, and you want to sell it to a, you know, a retirement home or the next person who's going to use it for a little while, yeah. Which and then my question to you is, what are your thoughts regarding separation anxiety, or I mean, real emotions after a horse and a human have such a strong.
Well, they possibly could have separation distress. You see, and then when you look at humans, call it grieving.
The so you think horses grieve too?
The main difference between a human being and a horse or a dog is the size of the computer that sits up on top. We have this gigantic computer, but the emotional systems are the same. They're the same, but you're going to have more complex emotions. I don't think horses, since they don't have verbal language, aren't going to write sorrowful poetry or something like that because they don't have language.
I want you to say it again.
But
the systems are the same.
Well, the emotional systems are the same, but basically what's different is this huge computing power that we have up on top. Raw computing power. That horses and dogs just simply don't have it. Now, and then something like a lizard would have a lot less than a dog or a horse.
You think a lizard has emotions too?
Well, that's debatable. But they mammals and birds definitely do.
Yeah, birds. I do not interface with birds very well, but they are fascinating. So I did wonder to myself, in the title of your book, Animals, or one of them, Animals Make
I
Us.
I have Animals in Translation, where I talk about the visual thinking. Then Animals Make Us Human, my other book, which I don't seem to have a copy right here, by is Animals Make Us Human. It's got a kind of a brown cover, and I talk about animal emotions in that. I also have a very extensive chapter in there on clicker training of horses.
So,
and I oh I got to tell you about Sarah Matlock's Mustangs. She got some Mustangs from the BLM. This was during COVID, and clicker trained them to come up to people, and there was differences in the genetics. You had the hothead in the back that was the last one to be trained, and they got them all trained, and then they had this show, and I went to it, and they had strange men showing them at Halver. It worked.
So interesting. So do you think
I saw it. I didn't, you know, Sarah Matlock and her students did this, but I went to the horse show and
so
it was just amazing. And we did it during COVID. We had social distance and all that.
Oh, so do you think that you can teach and should perhaps have variability be like an intellectual item that you teach the
horse?
Well,
you want to teach, you want them to get used to different things, because like a little kid running around, a little toddler, that's going to scare a horse unless they get used to little kids. You might have a four-wheeler vehicle. You might have a pickup truck. You might have a big show trailer, different kinds of cars to get them used to all these things, different kinds of flags. Different sounds you're going to have at the fairground, like auctioneers. And what I noticed at our own sale, at our horse sale, our horses were much less stressed than the race horses were. But the auctioneer sound was more stressful than just people talking on the PA. So it's important to train them to both people talking and auctioneer chant. See, those are very different sounds.
So those... there's so many different individual things that you just talked about. And that makes sense to me that we should take the time to show them those things. I'm wondering back to your...
I would just start with the auctioneer chant, very low volume.
Sure.
And just a little more exposure. Feed them what's going on. And,
yeah.
You know, just gradually. I want to be very careful when I first introduce something like an auctioneer chant to not scare them. Remember back to the first experience. First experiences with something new need to be good, or at least neutral. So you don't want to go in and be blasting an auctioneer chant. I'd play it really low.
Right.
And
That's it,
and
right.
just gradually get them used to it.
And then the rule of five or whatever, however many times they experience that, and then it's like, okay, check these types
Well, I
of
say I
sounds.
make a category, and I'm, but you see, you've got to think about sensory-based thinking is very specific. You see, when you look at top-down thinking, okay, like low-stress horsemanship, let's say that, or low-stress cattle handling, that's not specific. You see, then you have
Right.
different specific things you would do to accomplish low-stress horsemanship.
I guess what I'm driving
Or
at
whatever you want to
is the
call it, you know, I'm
sure. Good horsemanship. Let's just call
let's call
it
it good horsemanship. All right, let's just call it that. And then it's bad horsemanship. I mean, all the awful things, tie them up to a pole and let them fight it out. Well, that's
that's
not,
not even horsemanship.
oh, it's
That's
not, it's just awful. It's just awful.
terrible. But
Terrible.
what I'm
Yeah.
driving at is basically what you were talking about in the beginning, that there are certain things that you cannot show a horse every individual thing in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
So you have to show them, or I'm going to say this back, you tell me if I'm
Yeah.
right, that you have to show them enough things in a category that then they're going to categorize all the things that are in that group.
Yes.
Is that right?
Well, they you can get if the first experience, let's say, with the type of flag they use in a parade. Large flag, you got a pole that you put in the by the stirrup. And the first time a horse experiences that type of flag, and you scare the living you know what out of it. You might have a problem with training to flags. Please don't do that. Let's hang them on the fence or put them, you can tie the flag poles to the fence, let the horse walk up to them, and don't shove it in some small pen. You do it in something at least the size of the arena so that they can walk up to that. And then I'd get some of those flags that are the on a like a kind of a curvy top, like that banner things. And then some of those pennants. You see them on construction sites, the little triangular pennants. Now, when I think about those look very different than the type of larger flag that I would be using in a parade. You know, and you might have an American flag, and there might be four or five other different flags. As I said before, I don't think I train it to every state flag.
But let's say you have five different types of flags, big ones, triangle ones, the weird open house ones, and then let's say you have five different ones that the horse can't
Well,
has
then there's a point
gotten.
where they've seen so much flappy stuff that it all goes into a big category, I think, eventually. But why a
That
flag?
is.
Why are flags scary? And why are balloons scary? They make erratic, rapid movement. That's what flags and balloons do. And the reason why bikes are scary is because they sneak up on you silently, where vehicles will tell you they're coming. So the best way to introduce a horse to a bike would be just to let a horse walk up to a bike, and then you slowly walk it around just beside it, and then you'd get on it, ride it very slowly. So the horses aren't afraid of bikes. But there was a case in California where a kid wanted to go to the office of a feed yard, and he rode his bike in there, and the cattle about stampeded.
Oh
They'd never
no.
seen a bike before, and it had come in fast.
We've heard, I'm sure you've heard of some of those trail accidents where horses get very, very afraid of the silent electric bikes that just end up right
Yeah, but
behind
let's
them.
get them used to those scooter things. Let's get them used to these things because electric bikes and scooters are around and they might be at a show. So let's get them used to the scooters and golf carts. That'd be another thing that's around. And they don't make much noise. You see, as a visual thinker, I'm seeing these different vehicles. And a scooter looks very different than a golf cart. Think about it visually.
Right. Even though they might sound similar.
Well, you see, they can be sound, but most of the things that tend to really frighten horses where they spook is visual stuff. Now, they can be afraid of certain sounds. They can associate a certain sound with being fed or associate another sound with a with something bad's going to happen.
Right. So, Temple, why do animals make us human?
Well, let's think about when people first started domesticating the dog, the wolf. What an advantage that gave to people. Hunt for you, guard you. That'd be a huge advantage. Just think about
I'd
that.
say.
Yeah, be a huge advantage.
So to be human.
Well, also the animal gets fed by the human,
So
and
that.
they help the human hunt, and then the dog gets some of the meat too.
So we are inextricably woven together
Yeah.
over time.
Well, you see, that's the way we should be treating the horses, because I've noticed now that the horses that are doing this, these really nice methods of training. I was really impressed with this trait with this horse show, a Mustang horse show with strange men showing them at halter.
Yeah, that's very
That's pretty
cool.
impressive.
Yeah. What is possible with horses and horsemanship?
And she totally, Sarah Matlock students totally worked with using clicker training. And there's a, in my book, Animals Make Us Human, there's a discussion about clicker training. There's lots of materials on how to do it. And it's basically a variable reinforcement schedule similar to a slot machine. Because years ago, B.F. Skinner found that if you give a rat a food pellet every time it presses a bar, it presses it less than if it's a variable reinforcement schedule. You sometimes get it, you sometimes don't.
I'm sure you're aware of the interesting studies around casinos, human casinos, and if a person wins too often, they will stop coming.
Yeah, but that's how the clicker training works. It works
Yeah.
on those exactly same schedules of reinforcement. But then on the other hand, they play and they never pays off, they're going to quit coming. You see, there's an optimal amount of variable reinforcement. You can't just keep doing the clicker forever and never feed the horse.
So one of the things that I've thought about is what is the reward, right? So the concept of clicker training, meaning you have a request, a marker, and some sort of a reward.
Food usually is the reward.
Usually, but
Usually, but there's
sometimes,
other things. Some animals are very respond to praise. They
right, or a feeling.
totally respond to praise.
And Tom was talking about in his book that horses want closeness. I think this is real, but he wrote it straight up that horses want closeness more than
Well,
they
you
want
see,
food.
and the basic principle is you have to do something that's very rewarding for the animals. Now, they found in dogs that some are more food motivated than others, and some are more praise and relationship oriented. Well, we're probably
Fascinating.
going to have to start wrapping it up in a few minutes.
We
So,
are. It's
yeah.
time. It's time. I so appreciate it, and it is fascinating to hear you talk. I can't even express to you. I want to say thank you very much on behalf of all of my guests and the folks that are listening. Everyone was very, very excited to hear you talk about this, in particular because you have really helped a lot of us have a better relationship with our horses because of understanding how they think, and in specific, getting away from the verbal measurement of their value.
Yeah.
Because once we divorce valuing a horse based on whether or not they can speak words, suddenly, the value of an individual horse as a friend, as a partner, as an individual that can make you grow. If you remove the criteria of being able to use language, which is what you've
Yeah.
done, it really changes the how much we value our horses. And I thank you very, very
Well, it's
much for
been great to be
sharing.
here. I'm going to leave the meeting and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Temple.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm
Take
going to
care.
sign off now.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Goodbye.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Wow. So I don't know what else to say. I was not teary until the end, but now I'm going to be. So many things to think about. I think it's exciting to hear such a different perspective or coming around to her viewpoint on all of it, and having little tiny bits of light shown in on the way that we maybe interpret or can think about our horsemanship, right? So, that being said, I want to thank everybody for being here for the Horsemanship Remarks Show Sunday special with Temple Grandin. I'm sure I will be reading all of your comments later. And thank you, Elon Musk, for getting the satellites organized towards the end because I was starting to freak out at the beginning. All right, everybody. We'll see you Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for the regular Horsemanship Remark Show. My good buddy, Michael Sparling. Bye, everybody.